Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. This is the day we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And what a week it's been. There is so much breaking so fast that most major media outlets are now publishing stories called Here's What You Need to Know About What Happened in the Past 24 Hours. Today's guest, David K. Johnston, writes about what has happened over the past couple days in his latest column for the Daily Beast called Donald Trump is a Clear and Present Danger. David K. writes, recklessly firing FBI Director Jim Comey eliminated any remaining doubt. Donald Trump and his administration cannot be trusted to have any role in investigating his and his entourage's relationship with Russia and Russians. Yet he is about to seize control of that probe while the Republican-controlled Congress acts less like a co-equal branch of government and more like a White House subsidiary. David K. Johnston is founder and editor of DCReport.org, a nonprofit news service that reports on what politicians do, not what they say. David is the author of 6 books, including his latest bestseller, The Making of Donald Trump. Hi, David. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Rose.
Thank you for joining us. And in other news this week, the FCC voted on party lines to begin overturning net neutrality rules. And Craig Aaron, president of Free Press, said that FCC chair Ajit Pai's intent is clear, to destroy the internet as we know it and give even more gatekeeper power to a few huge companies like AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon. Craig Aaron is the president of Free Press. It's a nonprofit devoted to changing media and technology policy. It also promotes the public interest and strengthens democracy. Hi, Craig. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me back.
Great to have you. Well, as we always do on Your Calls Media Roundtable, we start off on a positive note and highlight journalism that stood out this week. So, David K. Johnston, let's start off with you. What did you see this week that caught your attention?
Well, there's a 34 photograph array in the Santa Cruz Sentinel of the history of the cement ship, the SS Palo Alto. It was built in Oakland in 1919 and therefore not needed to be a tanker in World War I. And about a decade later, it was towed down to Santa Cruz where it was used for entertainment and dances and whatnot. When I was a boy in Santa Cruz in the 60s, went fishing there a few times. And it's, after several bad storms and having been broken in several pieces over the years, it's close to the end. But I thought it would be nice for anybody who's been down to Aptos and seen it to see the 34 shots of it that go back many years.
David, how often do you read the Santa Cruz Sentinel?
Oh, I check it fairly often. I get up every morning and read 5 newspapers, starting at the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, my local paper in Rochester, New York, the Washington Post and the LA Times, and then I, you know, look around. I look at the Sentinel once in a while. I subscribe to the Sacramento Bee, though I don't see it very often. But I usually look at the Sentinel, I don't know, maybe once a month, and always before I go on your show.
All right. Well, thank you for that. It sounds like a great story. We'll check out those photos. David K. Johnston is founder and editor of DCReport.org. And what about you, Craig Aaron? What caught your attention this week?
Well, I think, like everyone, you know, I was pretty breathlessly following all the news out of the White House, and so the story that probably everyone has read, I hope they have, was Michael Schmidt's original piece reporting on Donald Trump's meeting with Jim Comey to try to urge him to back off of investigating General Flynn. In there, though, was this nugget that what he wanted him to do instead was to prosecute reporters who were leaking reporting on leaks of information. So that's really stuck with me this week as an incredible piece of reporting. If I have to pick one that people haven't seen, I would point to a story out today in the Detroit News, which has gotten some documents showing that the government has begun using new snooping devices, Stingray cell phone snooping devices, in immigration raids and to try to track undocumented immigrants, which is just a huge story showing the expansion of this surveillance technology and who they're using it against. Detroit News, Robert Snell, is the author. Really important story just breaking now.
Wow. And we learned this week that 41,000 undocumented immigrants have been arrested during Donald Trump's first 100 days. 41,000. And that's another story that didn't get that much attention this week because of the latest scandals in D.C.
Yeah, it's been remarkable. I mean, every day, as you say, things are just feels like things are turned upside down. And as always, you know, looking around for those stories that are around the edges, under the radar, things that are happening, policies that are being enacted that you know aren't on the front pages, but a lot of damage being done. I think David has it right with a clear and present danger on so many fronts. Mm.
All right. Well, that is Craig Aaron, president of Free Press, and we will provide links to these stories at yourcallradio.org right after the show. Well, let's dive in here and talk about what's been happening this week. And David, since Craig brought up that piece in the New York Times about Donald Trump telling James Comey to jail journalists who publish classified information, this, according to the New York Times, happened during a private meeting in February with James Comey and Trump. And according to this piece, presidents are rarely afraid to wrangle and bully reporters. Trump's predecessor was pilloried by news organizations for aggressively prosecuting leakers, but Trump's suggestion breached new territory for political reporters who already consider their profession under siege. Can you talk about this? What do you make of this?
Well, this is Donald. Donald is a bully. He's always been a bully. I mean, he's been threatening and trying to get me fired since 1990 when I revealed that he wasn't a billionaire when he claimed to be a multi-billionaire. And Donald has long had dossiers prepared on people. I know he prepared one on me because he told me about it once. He tries to discredit anyone who doesn't simply accept what he says. So, you know, he loves the New York Post and others who will take whatever he says and don't care about the facts and make news out of it. And he absolutely detests people who check the facts. I think it's disturbing but not surprising that more hasn't been made out of Schmidt's reporting. And Schmidt and some other Times reporters, notably Maggie Haberman and Glenn Thrush, have been doing extraordinary work. But because Donald is so far outside experience in how presidents deal with leaks, it's sort of like, yeah, well, that's Donald. And it should be, wait a minute, this is inappropriate. And underlying all of that is, it's not appropriate for the President of the United States to be dealing directly with the head of the FBI. We have protocols in place where the White House counsel is supposed to make requests when they want to know things from the FBI. But then, of course, Donald is someone who has no understanding of boundaries or how government works.
Craig, what would you add? In the New York Times piece, Marty Baron, the Washington Post's executive editor, is quoted as saying, suggesting that the government should prosecute journalists for the publication of classified information is very menacing, and I think that's exactly what they intend. It's an act of intimidation. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I certainly agree with Marty Baron on that. I think that's exactly what they're doing. And I think, moreover, you know, as we're talking about a new FBI director being appointed and who that's going to be, I want to know if questions are going to be asked about a free press and about what they're going to do in terms of reporters aggressively covering this administration. And, you know, fortunately, I think reporters are only getting more aggressive in covering this administration. But again, we see, you know, how much Trump cares about his media image, how much he's obsessed with the media, but how dangerous that is when you actually potentially put the power of the state behind it.
David, you wrote a column for the Daily Beast called Donald Trump is a Clear and Present Danger, and you did a very good job of summarizing all of the breaking news that we learned this week. Can you put all of this into context for us? What do we know at this point? And what don't we know?
Well, in terms of the FBI investigation, we know that there were a series of conversations and meetings between the president and Comey, and we know that Comey, trained as a prosecutor, immediately memorialized his conversations, whereas Donald doesn't keep notes. He, in fact, in business, he tore up his calendars at the end of every month. Donald, I don't think, has an appreciation of how much judges rely on immediately memorialized conversations as the best evidence, not recollections. And It's very clear now from Comey's friends that he was very uncomfortable about these meetings. I think it was an error in judgment for him to go to dinner with the president, but the advice of his top staff was that the president calls you, you got to go do this. And Donald needs to shut down these investigations. And let me just give you one example that came out in the news this week on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Not a well-written story, but nonetheless one of the most important stories that's come out. Donald was involved with one of the Russian oligarchs in building the Trump Tower Toronto, which went bankrupt. His company was to manage the hotel. The hotel got an $815 million loan, of which Donald got at least $15 million paid over to him. That loan comes from a Russian government bank whose executive chairman is Vladimir Putin. So whenever you hear Donald say, I have nothing to do with Russia, nonsense. Nonsense. And for going back to at least 1990, when Donald has been in need of cash, Russian oligarchs have shown up one way or another, buying properties from him, engaging in business deals with him that have benefited him.
To that point, David, so much of the coverage revolves around the Trump-Russia scandal, but what about the business interests? Do you think that journalists are following those issues with the same rigor?
Well, you don't know what's in the works. I mean, you know, lots of investigations take a long, long time. And so we don't know, you know, what is in the works. You know, my little news organization, we DC Report, we have things that we're working on with a budget of close to zero that will reveal more things about Trump and finances. We've already done a couple of important pieces, one about the involvement of Wilbur Ross, Trump's friend and the Commerce Secretary, probably the richest guy in the cabinet. And his deep involvement with a Russian money laundering bank, the Bank of Cyprus. And I'm sure that we will see continued examination of things like Jared Kushner's sister inviting Chinese investors to come to the U.S., or if you put up a certain amount of money, you can generally get a visa. The implication being if you put it up with us, you will definitely get a visa. Jared Kushner has played some role in Lockheed's sale of about $10 billion of war equipment to the Saudi government, which Donald will be seeing the Saudis this weekend. So I think that you will see some coverage of this, but the coverage that really needs to be done will require subpoena power, and of course journalists don't have that.
Aaron, what are your thoughts on this? David just mentioned this Lockheed deal, and the New York Times reports it's actually a $110 billion weapons sale. The Times reports that on May 1st, Jared Kushner welcomed a high-level delegation of Saudis to a reception at the White House, and they were talking about this $100 billion plus arms deal, and seeing that cost could be a problem, several administration officials said that Jared Kushner picked up the phone and called the CEO of Lockheed Martin and asked her whether she could cut the price, and the guests watched slack-jawed, and she told him she would look into it. And this is a piece that could slip through the cracks because of what's happening with all of the scandals.
Yeah, I mean, slack-jawed is right, and, you know, I'll admit, for me, a pretty intense consumer of news, that particular piece did slip through the cracks. And so I think we're at this moment in this Trump administration where, you know, every day these huge scandals are being exposed, terrible policies, really damaging things being put forward, and it's almost impossible to keep up because so many things are happening at the same time. Even when it's your job to be on top of these things, you can almost miss it. And as we enter the next phase of this, maybe we're starting to see some of the beginnings of movement in Congress and elsewhere as they slowly, you know, perhaps begin to recognize just what a disaster is happening, which has been obvious to some for quite some time. You know, that's going to be only more important that these things don't disappear from the radar, because there's just so much on so many fronts in so many countries all happening at once.
Right. And at this point, David, we're going to move on from Trump and Russia. What questions should the media be asking from here on out?
Well, the first thing before even asking questions is to fact check every single statement that comes from the White House. When I got Trump's 2005 tax return, the White House put out a statement saying he paid more in taxes than he did, and Donald subsequently claimed his income was almost $100 million higher than is on the return. And all sorts of journalists quoted what the White House said, in some cases with no attribution, when they had a document that showed it wasn't true. And that should carry a message. You cannot trust anything said by this White House. All politicians, you know, posture, make themselves look good, distort the truth, and sometimes lie. But with Donald, the oddity is straightforward truth-telling. So that's number one. Journalists need to keep pressing the issue of his business connections and financial connections as of his family and the Kushners to businesses. Note that Donald Jr. is working on what he calls a new initiative or a new deal with some people in Dubai. When Trump said, oh, no, we won't do any international business after I'm in the White House, promise they, I didn't think then that they ever intended to keep, and we now know that they're not keeping. So I think there needs to be a real focus on Donald Trump using the White House for his family and his personal benefit. And first and foremost, I think that will be important to understanding what Trump's doing.
On fact-checking, David, because there is a race to get the story first, we used to get stories, they would break every day, now they're breaking every hour. And so there's so much competition to try to get the stories out there. Do you think that the media are doing a good enough job making sure that what they're reporting is factual, especially because so much of what we're reading is based on sources inside the White House?
Well, there clearly is a rush to put things up as soon as you know them, but you haven't seen a single major skin back yet by any of the major news organizations. There is a risk that someone will make a big mistake. And by the way, Rose, it's very important to keep this in mind. Trump has solid support from more than a third of Americans. And if you read the reports or watch the television or listen to the radio of those journalists who've gone out and talked to Trump supporters, many of them look at what's going on right now that is troubling us and probably much of your audience and going, this is all malarkey, these are a bunch of people who just hate Donald, because they are not listening to any news organizations that actually check facts and do a thorough job. They're listening to organizations like Breitbart that act as propaganda for the White House. And we should be very troubled that such a large portion of Americans don't believe organizations that have, in some cases, 100-plus year reputations of not always getting it right, but correcting when they're wrong and of telling you where they got their information and giving it to you in a way that holds up over time.
And later in the show, we'll be talking about that, especially the Sinclair Tribune deal. If it goes through, Sinclair will reach 70% of all television households. This is a right-wing group that packages pro-Republican TV segments. They actually tell their stations to air these, and this is they reach a lot of people in this country, so we're going to be talking about that a little
and
later
Rose,
in the show.
We have, where I live, we have two of these stations. They run something called the Terror Alert Desk Reports, which are simply sophisticated anti-Muslim bigotry. And these are the people, remember, involved in the swift voting of John Kerry.
Right. They played that documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is David K. Johnston. He's founder and editor of DCReport.org, a nonprofit news service that reports on what politicians do, not what they say. We're also joined by Craig Aaron, president of Free Press, a nonprofit devoted to changing media and technology policy and strengthening democracy. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. It's our media roundtable. Once again, there's so much going on. It's hard to keep up with everything. In addition to talking about the latest scandals, though, we also want to talk about things that may have fallen through the cracks. And so if there's a story that you saw this week that you think deserves more attention, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's talk about net neutrality. And Craig, this did get a bit of attention. John Oliver talked about it, and once again, servers were shut down, the FCC's lines exploded, and yesterday, along party lines, the FCC voted to begin ending net neutrality. What does that mean exactly? That's the way I've seen it framed in the media, to begin the process of ending net neutrality.
Yeah, so net neutrality, of course, is just something that means no discrimination. It means when you go online, you should be able to go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want, and it's not up to your phone or cable company to decide which websites and which services are going to work. And back in 2015, after an intense amount of public pressure, public campaigning, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, actually passed strong net neutrality rules. Those rules subsequently have been upheld in federal court twice. But now that the Trump administration is in charge, his chairman of the FCC, a guy named Ajit Pai, is threatening to roll back those rules, to overturn them. And the way things work at the FCC is, in order to do something like that, the first thing you have to do is what's called a notice of proposed rulemaking. And that's what happened yesterday. They voted 2-1 to open up public debate and public conversation over overturning these rules. And so throughout the summer, they'll be taking in comments. In fact, there are already more than 2 million comments in the docket, even before the vote took place, to begin the process to try to take away these rules and go from really solid, legally sound protections that make sure your internet experience is free and open, and basically to a system in which they're saying, hey, you should just trust these big companies. They told us they're not going to do anything wrong. So if they succeeded, it would be a major, major setback. It is easier said than done. And so there is a big public fight ahead. There are legal fights ahead. Congress may get involved. So this is closer to the beginning of this stage of the fight than the end, even though they voted yesterday. But it does set things down a dangerous path.
The one Democratic member on the FCC was the sole dissenting vote. The FCC's two Republican members voted to dismantle net neutrality. Why do they want to dismantle net neutrality, Craig?
I mean, the short answer is they're doing the bidding of the biggest phone and cable companies. Mixed in with that is sort of a strain of that's moving through the Republican Party, which is anything the Obama administration did is inherently bad, and they're trying to roll back those signature achievements. But the main motivation is that companies like Verizon, Comcast, and AT&T want to get rid of these rules. They don't want any limits on what they can do, how they can, you know, favor their own content or those of their partners, and how they can cement themselves really as the gatekeepers over the future of the media. So Ajit Pai, a former Verizon attorney, a former aide to now Attorney General Jeff Sessions when he was in the Senate, has been put there to do just that, to get rid of common sense, light touch regulations, basic consumer protections, and give free rein to the biggest phone and cable companies to control the internet.
So if this went through, if I subscribe to Comcast and I went to David's website, dcreport.org, is it possible that that site could just be really, really slow, but say NBC would be very fast?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the worst case scenario, you're going to David's site to watch a video that he's made, and you get the spinning wheel of death, and it says, hey, you know what's actually available right now, though, is NBC or Fox or what have you. Now, of course, it's probably not going to be that obvious. You know, what they're going to do is they're going to mess around in the back end of the internet to give a slight edge to their content and services, so you get that slow down, and suddenly you say, well, I don't know why this isn't working, but it's the internet. I can go somewhere else, and where you're going to go is to the content they've created or owned. And we've seen it happen before with them interfering with their competitors, places like Netflix. You don't understand why it's not working. You call the cable company. They say, well, maybe you should subscribe to a higher tier of service for another $30 a month. But what it turns out they were doing is they were actually just clogging the pipes, so that content couldn't get through. So whether we're talking about news, entertainment, you know, the internet is such an incredible environment for political organizing. You shouldn't have to go through AT&T or Comcast, get their permission to speak, to start a business, you name it. You lose net neutrality and you use that sort of fundamental protection and the ability, and this is really what they're gunning for, the ability of the FCC to step in and do anything about it. The motivation here is really to defang the agency, you know, just at a moment when it got rid of its baby teeth. You know, it's just starting to act like a watchdog, and now this pressure is coming in to really, you know, almost make it meaningless as anything but a rubber stamp for what the biggest companies want to do.
David, you have been covering the telecom industry for a long time now. What do you think of the coverage?
Oh, I think the coverage has been pretty good. It's hard for people to grasp this. This is a fight between the people who control the network and the people who provide content. And part of the problem, a big part of the problem here is AT&T, Comcast, Charter, Spectrum, the companies that own the fiber optic lines, the ISPs, should not be in the content business. There's an inherent conflict of interest. So that when Comcast owns NBC, it owns movie studios, it owns television production shops, and it owns the pipes, you have this terrible conflict of interest. And this is why we need legislation that says, if you're in this business, you can't be in that business. It's the same problem we have with where we now have allowed banks corporations to be in retail banking, the risky business of investment banking, and in the risky business of insurance. Those should be separate businesses as we required under the old Glass-Steagall Act. One of the other important issues here is the companies that are winning this fight, AT&T, Verizon, and the other ISP providers, all of them started out as regulated monopolies. They have deep experience in how to work with government. On the other side are companies like Google that are relative newcomers to Washington and don't have the ties, the connections, the experience to be on an equal footing. And consumers will be the losers here if Ajit Pai, who was a high-level lawyer for Verizon, succeed in this plan that will distort what happens in the internet, raise prices, and I don't see anything good coming out of what is being proposed.
David K. Johnston is the founder and editor of DCReport.org. Craig Aaron is president of Free Press. And coming up after the break, we will talk about the Sinclair Broadcasting Group's $3.9 billion bid for Tribune Media. If this deal goes through, Sinclair will reach nearly 70% of all television households. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KLW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. Coming up at 11, it's Inflection Point with your host, Lauren Schiller. Stay with us.
This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are joined by David K. Johnston, founder and editor of DCReport.org, a nonprofit news service that reports on what politicians do, not what they say. Craig Aaron is president of Free Press, a nonprofit devoted to strengthening democracy. And now I would like to welcome Todd Frankel to the show. Todd is a staff reporter with The Washington Post, where he covers people and policy. Hi, Todd. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. You have been extensively covering the Sinclair Broadcasting Group's $3.9 billion bid for Tribune Media, and you report that if this goes through, Sinclair will reach about 70% of all television households. For those who are not familiar, can you just tell us a little bit about Sinclair Broadcasting Group?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they are sort of been flying under the radar for a while. They are based just outside of Baltimore, Maryland, family-controlled, the publicly listed company that owns about 120 so stations nationwide and will grow to over 200 if the deal with Tribune goes through. And, you know, they owning local broadcast stations, you know, they don't have the same high profile as one of the cable networks, certainly not a Fox News or MSNBC. But in consolidating control of the local broadcast market, it's quite a powerful thing to have a hold on. And, you know, as we were talking about Ajit Pai earlier, you know, he's pointed out that these local broadcasters are one of the main drivers of political news. You know, everyone gets that at home. So, you know, even though they are not like a brand name, they are certainly a very big, powerful player in the television market.
It's important to point out that, according to Mother Jones, local TV news still manages to reach 9 in 10 American adults. 46% watch it often.
Yeah, and, you know, it's sort of funny because everyone pays so much attention to what's going on with the cable channels. Peak TV and all the, you know, the shows we love to watch and Netflix and all this. But, yeah, broadcast is still really popular. And actually one of the surprising stats that I stumbled on in reporting this was that the number of broadcast-only households, households that only get broadcast TV, has actually grown a little bit in the last 5-6 years as people have cut cable. And it's now, you know, it went from about 13% of households to 17%. So it's actually growing in importance rather than shrinking.
Craig, Todd's colleague, Callum Barchers at The Washington Post, reported that Jared Kushner claimed in a December meeting with business executives that Trump's campaign traded access for less critical coverage from Sinclair. And when I was reading about this deal, I thought, Sinclair sounds familiar. And then I remembered it was when I read about this back in December that Sinclair says that they denied favoring Trump and said its station aired more interviews with him than Hillary Clinton because he actually would speak to them. But if you look at what they're airing, they have so many interviews with Donald Trump, very softball questions. What are your thoughts on this, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. I mean, Sinclair has basically been Trump TV. They've aired, you know, dozens of interviews with Trump during the campaign, you know, essentially sort of uncut and uninterrupted, you know, pushing the agenda and the talking points. They have a long history of doing this. We talked about the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth movie they ran to help sink the candidacy of John Kerry. They've, for a long time, employed and been in business with Armstrong Williams, who people might know also as Ben Carson's campaign manager. He was actually caused a fine by the FCC because he was on the payroll of the Bush administration and yet going on Sinclair as if he was independent to push administration propaganda. Not only did they didn't fire him, they actually promoted him and put him in charge of one of their front groups so they could control more TV stations. So Sinclair has a long record when it comes to national politics. There are good local reporters working at Sinclair stations all across the country. But when it comes to the national political agenda, they have a long record of essentially just taking Republican talking points and putting them into their broadcasts and really pushing conspiracy theories, pushing fear-mongering when it comes to terror. They've hired some ex-Trump campaign spokespeople to come work for the company. And now they're looking for payback. They're looking for Trump's FCC after all that favorable coverage, and they were touting the fact that Kushner was touting the fact that Sinclair had a bigger reach in Ohio than CNN. After all of that, now they're coming for their policy favors. And within 2 days of the election, Sinclair leadership was going to investors and saying, you know, popping champagne and saying, now we're going to get rid of all these limits on media ownership. We're going to be able to get as big as we want. And that's exactly what they're doing.
David, what would you add?
Well, I'm the only journalist who's caused a broadcaster, a whole chain, to be forced out of business over these very issues of using the public airwaves to further the owner's interests rather than, as the law requires, the public interest, convenience, and necessity. The problem is that the Democrats agreed some years ago to get rid of equal time provisions to some extent and the fairness doctrine, and we now have a situation that is exactly as Craig described it. This is just straight-out corruption in the classic institutional sense of it. The deeper question we should be asking is, why in the world are we allowing anybody to own that many TV stations? Hmm. I thought competition was a good thing. You can't have competition when you have a duopoly, a monopoly, or very limited competition, an oligopoly. What we should be doing is saying you can't own more than, you know, 7 or 10 television stations around the country, and that way we would have a vibrant, competitive market.
Todd, I wanted to ask you, because you reported in one of your pieces that last month Ajit Pai's FCC reinstated a rule that helps station owners get around the national audience cap. It's called the UHF discount, and it allows stations to count just 50% of its audience from UHF stations toward the cap. Last fall, the FCC under Obama revoked that cap, but now with its return last month, stations have more room to stay under the cap.
Yeah, it's one of these rules that dates back to, and it was actually kind of funny when we were talking about the story to remind people about the dials on they used to have on TV sets, you know, and there's UHF and VHF, and the idea was that UHF channels, 14 and higher, had a weaker signal, and so you could discount the amount of audience you were able to reach, and there's a national rule that no single station owner is allowed to reach more than 39% of the country. And this UHF discount said that, all right, if you own these stations that broadcast on UHF, you only count 50% of your audience. So you can own more of these stations and theoretically reach more more people. So that was put in place this in September. The rule was put back and then were taken away, and then it was reinstated earlier this year under Trump's administration. And broadcasters love that, right, because they can now own more stations. They get this 50% discount for owning certain stations, even though we have now switched to broadcast transmission, and really there's not much difference between UHF and VHF.
If this deal goes through, Sinclair would go from having 173 TV stations to 215 stations nationwide. This would give this company unprecedented exposure and access to so many living rooms across the country. What is the process going to be like in the coming months, Todd?
There's going to be a lot of negotiating going on. I mean, they still need some changes to the rules. They're bumping up against different ownership limits. And so they're going to be going to the FCC and going to Congress and trying to get some more room on this. So they might have to sell certain stations. But certainly Sinclair is going to have an incredible reach. I mean, they already were the largest local broadcast owner, and now they're going to be even larger. How much larger is going to be up to? Some negotiating. But it's interesting because Sinclair has long had this rumored ambition to become the sort of Fox News of broadcast. And this certainly looks like a step in that direction.
And David, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting points out that when Donald Trump holds joint press conferences with foreign leaders, for example, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Sinclair often gets asked the chance to ask a question, and they're often softball questions. This is in the White House press room.
Right. This is, to some degree, of course, presidents have always favored some people and tried to avoid questions from others. I mean, this is not entirely without precedent, but what you're seeing here is this on a scale the likes of which we have never seen. And it fundamentally goes back to this issue of, we need a lot more competition, not less. And I think it's very surprising that Republicans, the party of business, continually in recent years have promoted bigness and lack of competition. That is one of the basic underlying problems in why our economy is not doing better. Competition promotes vibrancy and much better economics for people than monopolies, duopolies, and oligopolies.
Does the citizen's voice matter at all here, David?
I hope so. I mean, one of the premises of our website, dcreport.org, is we refer to our government. We show people how to file their comments, as John Oliver did with a much bigger audience than we have in this FCC matter. And I think that if we get more people to recognize that the making of the rules is what government is about, and you have a vital stake in the rules, and you can be heard, it will be better for our society. We own the government. We should act like owners.
Todd, after doing all of your research on Sinclair, what is this company's end game?
Yeah, I think they want to get so big that they have sort of a national, local broadcast network. They will be so big that they will be able to sort of act like a national cable network in terms of negotiating with advertisers and also getting out this message. I mean, they are unusual. I mean, it's interesting because 21st Century Fox owns both Fox News and local Fox stations, and for the most part, the local Fox stations do not sound like Fox News, which has a reputation, obviously, for sort of right-wing leaning, diatribes. And so broadcast has been sort of inured to that. They haven't really done that. Sinclair is sort of breaking that mold and sort of walking this very sort of fine line where they are pushing it, sort of advocacy journalism on a right-wing scale at the broadcast local level, which is unusual. This hasn't really been tried, and certainly not at this scale before.
Todd Frankel is staff reporter with The Washington Post. Craig Aaron is president of Free Press. And David K. Johnston is the founder and editor of dcreport.org. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable, the day we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. In addition to talking about the latest scandals out of Washington, we also really want to talk about stories that may have slipped through the cracks. And so if you saw anything that you think deserves more attention, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email it feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Susan in Oakland. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just want to bring up a story I read in the L.A. Times, and it's health insurers plan big Obamacare rate hike, and they blame Trump. And then it goes on to talk about how they can't get any information, straight information, from the Trump administration, and it's pretty scathing. It says things like, there seems to be no coordination or planning, chief executive states. It's hard to know who's home, said another executive. We don't know who's making decisions. So I think that's a really big thing we should be talking about.
All right. Well, thank you. We saw that story, and we will put that up at our website, yourcallradio.org. Thank you for that. David, DCReport.org is reporting today that the House may have to vote again on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, they voted on a bill that, as a practical matter, hadn't really been written yet, and now that it's being gone through, first of all, they're discovering that things were put in that don't quite make sense, and more importantly, they're going to have to address the Congressional Budget Office. That is an arm of Congress that is the official scorer. What will this cost? What are the benefits of this? And they're going to have to deal with this legislation in connection with what happens from the CBO. So any change here is somewhere off in the future, and of course, as soon as the Republicans change Obamacare, it's now Trump Care, and they own it. They own every dead baby, every woman who dies of breast cancer because she couldn't get insurance, every worker who goes on to disability because he couldn't get coverage to fix the broken hand that keeps him from working. And all of this should lead to a simple fundamental debate. You know, as somebody who started a business before this with one of my sons, a hotel management company, it was none of my business who my employees loved, what church they did or didn't go to, what kind of car they drove. But you know what was my business? Their health status. And we need to get health care off the backs of business. And what I hope that this debate leads to is people recognizing that we are wasting so much money on health care in this country, spending so much more than the French, who have the best system in the world with universal care, than the Germans, than the Canadians, that it is the functional equivalent of all the income taxes paid by 99.3% of Americans. If we had universal, no out-of-pocket health care on any of those other systems, we could, statistically at least, eliminate the income tax for 99% plus of Americans. That's what hopefully this will lead to in time, not to the disaster that's been put forward by the Republicans that will lead to many deaths, many premature deaths, and to excessive levels of disability.
Well, thank you for calling, and we'll put that story at yourcallradio.org. Let's talk, we have about 6 minutes left. I want to talk about the death of Fox News founder Roger Ailes. He died yesterday at the age of 77, and he died almost a year after stepping down amidst widespread sexual harassment allegations. Fox News ultimately paid out $45 million to settle claims by more than 20 women. And I want to ask you, Craig, when you look back at Fox News and just the effect that it has had on our media ecosystem, the discourse in this country, what really stands out for you?
Well, it's hard, Rose, to think of anybody who's been more destructive to civic discourse and the state of the media than Roger Ailes during his career. What Fox News has done, the number of people it's gone after and hurt, how it's, I think, in a lot of ways devalued folks' trust in journalism, encouraged this kind of hyper-partisan programming masquerading as news. Roger Ailes was a genius in creating those environments, but I think his legacy, you know, his personal legacy is obviously one of destruction in the years, apparently, of harassment and other intimidation at Fox News. But the lasting legacy of, I think, real damage to the news industry, not in terms of profits, but in terms of quality, seriousness, has really harmed so much of what we used to take for granted, and it's all coming home to roost now in the form of the Trump administration.
Todd, what would you add? Great, Gabriel Sherman with New York Magazine has been writing about Fox for a very long time. He's been on top of especially the sexual harassment claims. And he was on the cable shows yesterday saying that we might not have Donald Trump if it weren't for Roger Ailes and Fox News. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's hard to dispute that. I mean, it's pretty clear that this sort of partisan, angry, foaming-at-the-mouth coverage was really not part of the landscape until Roger Ailes came on. And, you know, this is, you know, chickens come home to roost. And this is sort of an outcome that a lot of people could argue that was sort of designed by the Fox News ecosystem and that others have sort of taken up the mantle of. I don't know, even if you're on the conservative side of politics, it still has got to be sort of dismaying, the sort of angry nastiness that sort of pervades so much of the political discussion these days. And I think a lot of it's attributable to what Roger Ailes brought out at Fox News.
David, your thoughts?
Well, if we had a well-run, honest, conservative television network, I would say that'd be a good thing for the country. I like to hear lots of different voices. But that's not what Fox News was. Fox News was mendacious. They were repeatedly shown in studies and reporting by others to twist things beyond all recognition, and they would say them day after day after day after day after day, and then at 5:30 in the morning on a show, they'd say, oh, we made a mistake, and make one little minor correction that almost nobody heard. Fox has had a terrible, terrible effect on the quality of political discourse in this country, as your other guests noted, and whether that will change or whether Sinclair will rise up to replace it with something just as mendacious and distorting, we've yet to see. Robust public debate is a good thing to have, but large institutions that are not in any way accountable and that build their audience through what essentially is propaganda, in the case of Fox, propaganda for those elements of the Republican Party favored by Roger Ailes. Not all elements of the Republican Party, just those Roger Ailes favored. That's not good for democracy, and it's not good for the future of the country.
How do you think Fox News affected the rest of the media, especially with its, quote, fair and balanced motto?
Well, what a joke, fair and balanced, when they were nothing like that at all. They've, I think, caused not more introspection, but more self-censorship. One of the problems with the big newspapers, and the LA Times when I worked there was a good example of this, was in their home market, they continually self-censored on stories that were felt to be upsetting to the local establishment, big as LA is. After Otis Chandler left, it became much more of a problem. It's why I left the paper, and a number of other reporters did. And the attacks by Fox led to, they basically helped cow some of the big news organizations and make them be much more cautious than they should be.
What are your thoughts, Todd Frankel? I mean, it's kind of amazing to think that Bill O'Reilly was fired. I mean, he's no longer at Fox News. And according to Gabriel Sherman, not much has really changed at Fox News. I had the headline in one of his latest pieces is Women Can Wear Pants Now. But other than that, not much has changed.
Right. You know, actually, another interesting thing that happened was that I saw that MSNBC just beat Fox in one key demographic, right? So the market is sort of speaking to that. And I think that's what it's going to take. You know, naysayers and sort of tut-tutting from outside, I mean, it's this sort of what sounds like a gross corporate culture, will not change things unless, you know, the ratings go down. That's what sort of drove O'Reilly in the end, was this advertiser's boycott. And I think if the market speaks back and says, you know, we're not ready for this, this is not what we want anymore, then they'll change. But, you know, this monster's been created, and how to, you know, scale it back or turn it around is a difficult challenge.
And do you think that Sinclair will move in, or any other competitor?
You know, yeah, I mean, I think Sinclair is definitely taking a page from Fox News. I mean, I don't think we'll see quite as over-the-topness from them. But, you know, some of the things they do currently are sort of astounding. I mean, they have this these must runs that they send out to affiliates, and, you know, there's like a terrorism news desk that, you know, sort of meant to sort of scare and cajole viewers, and, you know, those sort of things are, and, you know, they talk about fake news, so they're like Fox News Lite. Now, whether they'll go the full way remains to be seen.
Craig, your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, they absolutely are stealing a page and trying to do a different model. And Sinclair, you know, sometimes is even more hard-edged, and it does go below the radar. So I think, you know, the fact that they have so much power and that we're seeing this, you know, appearance of a quid pro quo. Sinclair goes to bat for Donald Trump. Sinclair gets huge favors that would otherwise be unthinkable, and then the Trump administration pretends by changing the rules that they don't have as much reach. In some ways, this is like the last gasp of the Fox model. Both Sinclair and Fox seem very tied to Trump, and I think will rise or fall with him.
And Sinclair was the broadcasting company that refused to air Nightline when it ran the names of soldiers that were killed in Iraq, calling it anti-war. So Sinclair has been at this for a while now.
Yeah, they've been perfecting it, but they've been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. They used to be in small markets, then they took a big Washington, D.C. station. If they get this deal done, it's New York, it's L.A., it's Chicago. It's a huge reach in creating this universe of alternative facts where we wonder why, hey, how come not everybody's outraged about what's happening in this administration? Firing the FBI director, the answer is they might not be hearing about it because on these channels it's being covered as some kind of vast left-wing conspiracy.
We have a couple minutes left. Craig, what are you working on right now? What's next for Free Press and getting the word out about net neutrality?
Well, this is a huge moment for net neutrality. There were nearly 100 of us outside the FCC with megaphones yesterday protesting this decision. Millions of people have weighed in, the vast majority, against what the FCC is doing. We're going to continue to ramp that up, build the pressure on the agency, in Congress, in court, if we have to get there, and really fighting a misinformation campaign out of the FCC. They sent fake protesters to our protest to pretend that net neutrality was about censoring right-wing media. So they're really pulling out all the stops to try to, you know, keep the public voice out of the agency. We're going to do our best to make sure the public is actually heard on issues like net neutrality and opposing the expansion of Sinclair as well. You know, we're preparing legal filings to challenge that UHF discount rule as really preposterous that they would make that change just to benefit one company.
And Todd, very quickly, what are you working on right now?
I'm actually trying to work on some things that have nothing to do with Trump. It's sort of difficult. It sort of sucks all the oxygen out of the newsroom. But here and there, I'm trying to work on some things that speak to other issues and problems that we have going on.
Other issues. We'd love to have you back to talk about that. And what about you, David, just quickly? What are you working on?
I'm doing a book for Simon & Schuster that will be called The Trump Factor, How He's Making Things Much Worse for Most of Us, and that'll be out January 1st.
All right. David K. Johnston, founder and editor of DCReport.org, Craig Aaron, president of Free Press, and Todd Frankel, staff reporter with The Washington Post. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And a big thanks to Sadie Gribben, our intern, who is leaving us today. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.